kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. A lot of cool games to talk about. We're starting things off. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, though I'm slightly sad that we totally missed the maggot conversation that we had prior to the recording. I am convinced that could have easily been some stand-up routine or some comedy sketch.
Do you want to relive it now?
It wouldn't be as funny. Well, we could just stay what the idea was. We were talking about just shit like fruit flies or...
Yeah, fruit fly was buzzing around my face, which is, you know, it's. I'm sure it's going to happen a couple more times this episode because fucking fruit flies. But you went off on a tangent about fruit flies, and it was pretty magical.
I don't know where it all comes from. It just comes out of thin air. And then the end result was, where do maggots come from? Honestly, where do fruit flies come from? And yeah, I'm sure there's a scientist out there right now who's going to, and by scientist, I mean a guy with keyboard and Google who's going to go, well, this is where maggots come from. And you're missing the point, dude. I can Google too. Point is...
They come from flies laying eggs on the dead thing.
Exactly. It's like, we all know that, but there's just that general thought, like, before you got to look it up, or before you actually research, it's just where do maggots come from? They just show up one day. But we're on a weird ramble about that. I'm like, that could easily be a stand-up sketch, I think. Told in the right way. Throw somebody's like Mrs. in there who freaks out. He's like, what are you yelling about? Fucking maggots! Like, and the guy's yelling about, well, I don't know what to tell her. I ain't picking that mess up, but she wanted me to. Blah, 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 blah. I feel like that's what a lot of stand-up is, too. You notice that it's just literally a guy up on stage, you know, talking about, man, we were out the other day and the missus just freaked out about this thing I didn't understand. And I was like, girl, it's not that big a deal. She was like, no, it isn't. And he comes up with like this really awful, like, wife impersonation. And it's just him trying to be cool and collected about it. Stand up is weird. Mostly about the delivery, though. I'll give it that. But, God.
Stand up is weird. Maggots are weird.
Stand up maggots are dapper. And also confusing, because where would a maggot get a top hat and a cane?
I don't know. The best part about mysterious appearances of maggots is I used to work in a giant grocery store, and I used to work in the pet aisle, stocking shelves, and every now and then you would get a case of canned pet food in that one of the cans was opened up, and every now and then you get one of those that's just filled with maggots.
And there it is. You're like, yeah, you
it's
could
like,
probably.
Where did these? Why?
Where did they come from?
I don't want to touch this.
And they were on the shelves. Like, how did no one notice? Like, they get to the point where they're actually full of them and actually doing stuff. How did no one notice?
Well, no, they're not on the shelf. It's the still in the case that comes from the warehouse. Like the case will get damaged on the truck, and you're the one stocking the shelf. And you open it up, and there's a whole bunch of maggots waiting for you.
And you just like freak out, like, I'm on break.
No, I wouldn't put that one on the shelf. That would be pretty dickish of me to do.
Unless you had that really awful customer who comes in and berates you, and then picks up cat food to take home.
Fucking let the customer take care of this one.
Exactly. Well, then whoops! How'd that get in your cart?
Customer, clean up on pet aisle. You do the goddamn work. I'm lazy.
And I'm going on break. Screw this.
Oh, Jesus. Speaking of doing work, should we do some work?
Hardly working?
Well, we got some games to talk about. That's our kind of work.
Oh, I like that kind of work. In that case, I think I can make an exception just this one. I can do it.
You got some good games to talk about this week, too.
That is true. This has been... Spoiler, I guess, anyway, but it's been like a bit of a knockout release week for me. I'm not complaining though. I am happy with it.
Yeah, you got some good stuff to talk about. So let's get things going. The first game to talk about this week is called Wreckfest, developed by Bugbear Entertainment, published by THQ Nordic. It released August 27th on Xbox One and PS4 for $39.99, previously available on the PC. It's all about fun breakneck racing and over-the-top crashes. Wreckfest collides classic car games with new soft molding crash physics, sophisticated driving physics, and demolition derby racing. Purnell, tell us about Wreckfest.
Wreckfest is a game that I took on expecting it to be okay, not really jazzed about it.
Really? I've been hyped about this one for so long.
I may be like one of the only reviewers that have gotten this game that didn't know about its existence until the coach to use, like, you want to review this game? And that's a good thing, I think, because it means that I'm not riding the hype train.
You didn't have high expectations going in like I did.
Exactly. And what ended up happening when I was playing it was that I found myself very much entertained by this game. It is a racing game unlike anything I've ever played prior to. I mean, the last thing a game like this I've probably touched was Destruction Derby back in the day. Because most racing games I ever play, at most, it might be like you can wreck, but then the game warps you back on the track and your car is totally fine and you're back to racing again. No big deal. But this game, the carnage is there. It sticks around. And it didn't take no prisoners. So the idea of the game is that you are typically doing one of two events throughout the game, whether it's through the career mode or the any of the free play modes. But there is normal races and destruction derbies. But both of them involve the same overall premise of you're destroying the hell out of cars. But
yes,
there are a few differences in the two. Like, so the racing mode, it is literally, as I said, you're racing around a track, three laps typically. And the idea is that you're, as normal, trying to get in the first place. However, unlike a normal racing game, there are very few to no rules on this track. You are just trying to destroy the shit out of everything and get through to the end in one piece. Because you can actually wreck during a race and not finish the race.
Mm-hmm.
Because people don't give a crap. They're trying to kill you. And I like the fact that, or for better or worse, that while you are racing, every once in a while, you might get donked by somebody and just have to hit you off to the side. And the game will tell you that you now have a rival. Like, you know, Sir Ass-a-Lot hit your car. And it's like, okay, now you get bonus cred or points, which I guess alludes to, like, you know, I never even check. It's like more, it's like maybe more money at you get into a race. But you get bonuses if you find the guy who hit you and whack him back. So you are trying to find him amongst a sea of cars that are creating a sea of carnage, slamming each other. You're trying to find the one guy who hit you and whack him back. Though, if you're in the front of the pack trying to actually win the race, you'll likely find yourself with more rivals than actual means to, you know, get revenge on the rivals, because you're not trying to get absorbed back into that mess of cars just to find a guy. You want to keep driving. You want to keep first place.
Hell yeah.
But I will say that when I'm actually in the thick of a pack, it's really cool to be like, okay, I'm trying to get up to first, but in the meantime, if I see this asshole on the way, I'm going to wreck his face. And it feels good, too. I mean, because the collisions in this game, it's very arcadey, but it's not stupid arcadey. And I shouldn't say stupid, because I like stupid arcadey, too. But it's not extremely arcadey, absolutely. In the sense that, yeah, you are trying to destroy cars and stuff, but whereas in a lot of arcade racing games, you can, like, go full speed ahead, slam into a car, the car will flip over you, and you'll just go right under him like nothing ever happened. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't even collide with a guy. But in this game, that's not the case. So let's say, for example, you're coming up on a turn, your rival staring at you is right in front of you, and he's about to make a wide right, and you're like, okay, this is my chance. I'll just go straight ahead and slam into him while he's T-bone making his wide fucker. Right. And I'll T-bone him and just get back on the track. And yes, you can T-bone him, and it will feel very good for about a nanosecond. And then you'll also careen off the course, and you'll have to get worked back on, and you'll lose your place in the line. So instead of doing just a solid T-bone, you got to play it smart. You got to actually come up and hit him like kind of on the tail or towards the front to make him kind of spin out. And that way he'll do tons of damage to his car. You'll put a bit of damage on your own because, of course, you had to collide with the guy. But you'll maintain your momentum. You'll be able to keep going up the course. So you end up finding yourself in a situation where you're like, okay, what's the best way to hit this guy? Do I hit him now? No, no, no. This isn't the right time. Wait for the perfect time. Wait for the right turn. I can use him as a springboard off of a turn. Bounce off of him, knock him off to the rail, and then keep going. Like, you'll be plotting stuff like that as you go through the races. And in addition to that, if I remember correctly, there are also like submissions on some of these levels, right? Like where it might say, I don't know, like
deal so much damage or spin out three racers, stuff like that.
Yeah. So you can pursue those and also get more points towards actually advance. That's what it is. The points are towards career mode. So as you get more points, experience. That's how you advance the career mode experience. So it's like, okay, you'll get this much experience if you come in first place or second or third or whatever place, because I am glad that you don't have to get 1 through 3 to get some value out of doing a race. You're not constantly restarting the game just to get 1st through 3rd. Though you can do that, but you don't have to. But yeah, I like the fact that in addition to that, you can do the different submissions. And if you complete those, you'll get more bonuses towards getting up to the next ranks and new career mode levels and sections. Now, the earlier T-boning that I mentioned earlier, or that Joe mentioned, that actually comes into the Destruction Derby modes that kick in with the game. And with those, the sole purpose is to be the last man standing in a pile of carnage strewn throughout a general style arena. So what you're trying to do is you see other cars, you're driving around, you're just slamming into them, just beating the shit out of the cars. There's nothing else to describe. It is fantastic. And something worth mentioning both in this mode and also in the racing mode is that they were able to make it so that all the actual damage done throughout the course remains on the course throughout the entire thing. So the first race, the first run lap is going to be fairly tame, like, you know, because no one's really traversed the laps yet. Everyone still knew the route. They're just driving, slamming bit by bit. But by the third lap, all the bumpers and hoods and everything that got torn off of cars is still on the ground. You can drive over it, and it can screw up your handling while you're driving over all the junk. You're avoiding garbage as you're driving through the course. And there might be someone out there that goes, oh, that's stupid. I can't get a perfect lap that way. It's just the point. It's supposed to be that way. You want that on the course. Any sign some guy collided into, that sign's on the course. Any
piles of tires everywhere.
It is amazing. I loved seeing it. And it's also cool to be like, whoa, something really bad must have happened there. It's almost like driving on a highway and seeing the remnants of a car accident. It's like, who the... You just imagine what took place on the side of the road there, and you're glad you weren't a part of it.
It's like, even better, if a car does completely crash out and they're broken down, they stay on the course.
So even the cars out there are free to accidentally collide into and thereby kill you from beyond the grave.
Yeah, buddy.
It's a genuinely good time. And when you really think about it, this game, it's coming in at a decent time because I can't think of any other games on the market right now that are doing this. I can't think of any other racing. There's a lot of racing games, but they're all generally either hyper-realistic or they're teetering on arcade racing, but they're still, for the most part, hyper-realistic because everybody wants to get licensed cars. And when you get licensed cars, you're not allowed to show how beat up they can get. You're like, nope.
Yeah.
Well, you can't. If you want to design a game that involves car damage, like, well, no, the Nissan Prius. That's right now I'm in the real make and model combination, but Nissan Prius, you can't have, a wrecked bumper on this thing. We need to make these cars look good for vendors. Like, yeah, because apparently cars can't take damage in real life either. This would be stupid. Anyway, it's like, they won't allow them to do it, which means they can't even make a game like this. These guys come along and say, screw that. We don't want to be a part of the fold. We want to make a game that's different. What about the licensing? People need licensed cars. What about Toyota? Fuck Toyota. We don't need Toyota. We got Boyota. We made them up right now. Here's a car, the Butt Scratch 2000. It rolls. It has an engine somewhere in it. You know, it works. And honestly, I'm glad for that because it allows them to have free reign over the cars that they've put into the game that they came up with. And they can do something that no one else in the market is doing right now. And they do it well. That's the best part. This isn't, someone might see the price tag of $40 and go, oh, this is some budget title. They released it cheap because it's not holding any muster. It's stupid. Or it's not good enough to need to sell it at a budget to get it out the door. Those people who think that are incorrect. This game could have easily sold for $60 in today's market based on what you sometimes get in games for $60. And you're not paying $60. You're paying $40. And for that, you're getting a high quality, ridiculous game that will be tons of fun. And I even mentioned the fact that they have oddball vehicles in this game too. Like, you're not just driving cars. You're driving sofas, apparently. And what was
The first time I did a demolition derby with a fucking harvester, I was losing it. It was hilarious.
Yeah,
just a bunch of farm harvesters cruising around a field, bumping into each other, rolling over. This game is hilarious. It is literally almost all fun and games, except for one glaring issue I have with it.
I got to tell you, we share that issue.
You said earlier that you're happy that you can get some points, even if you don't finish in like the top spot or the, you know, do really good. You could still get some points and experience, and you don't have to keep resetting the race over and over. I kept resetting the race over and over to avoid the biggest problem with this game, and that is the load times. The load times in this game are brutal. We've been told that it is an issue that they are working on. I played the game today with, you know, it's day one officially today, and I played the game, and the load times are still really, really bad. I don't know how much improvement they can do on them, but they need to do something with these load times.
Yeah, because this, honestly, if I feel like I can go to the kitchen and grab a beverage and then come back while the game is loading, there's something wrong with that. And it feels funny because I think back to how load times were back in the day. Where like, I feel like when CDs first became the medium and we got load times, people were unkind to them, but it was less about how long they took, and they did take a while. But it was just more about the load times existing. And then we got used to it. We were like, okay, well, you get a good game, you got to have that load time, whatever. But then load times got better and better and better, to the point where sometimes they were just loading in the background while you were doing other stuff in the menus. So it's like to the point where it became non-existent. So to see another game come out with harsh load times in the present, it feels weird, almost wrong. I'd almost rather at least say, like, you know, there's some of those games where they'll come up with funny loadings. It's like loading the carbon monoxifier. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I've played games that they just come up with funny ways to describe the loading. Like, I'd almost at least rather have that, or give you like a stupid mini game while you're loading, like drive like a little miniature mom, like super sprint course while you're waiting for the game to start, something to just keep you from realizing that that bar is going real slow.
Yeah.
Did that 97 become a 72%?
This is a slow loading game. I will say, despite how bad the load times are, it is not enough to turn me off from the game. I have had such an absolute blast with this game. I have laughed at this game. I have smiled at this game. I have had such pure fun with this game. It has been a long time since I just had stupid giggles playing a game because I'm driving a lawnmower into other lawnmowers.
I've had triumphant screams with this game. And I will say this too. I didn't get to play multiplayer, but I can say that
it is so fucking, oh my God.
I'm about to say, I feel like games where you can outright slam into other people's cars.
Dude, online destruction derby is the shit. Oh my God.
Yes. Just the ability to be like, gotcha. Like, it's basically Mario Kart, but your car is the weapon. And I, just as I feel good when I hit a guy with a red shell in Mario Kart, I'd feel just as good if I hit a person I knew via T-Bone just on a course, like, sucker, how about you get out of my way?
The best part is with online, I didn't care about my performance. I just had fun slamming into other people. I came in like 14th on the one race, or not race, but the one destruction derby. I came in like 14th out of 16, I think. And I didn't care because I was just having fun smashing into other people and just, it's fun. It is a fun game.
I agree. And I want to say, I remember maybe a little bit off, you can vouch for me if it is, but I will say there even is some customization. If you're the type of person, like, I want to, you know, customize how my car works. Like, if you want to work with like how it handles, like maybe the weight or something, tinker with like the different specs on the car, you can do that. You can buy cars and you can buy upgrades for the parts on the car and all that. You can go on all of it. But if you don't give a crap about that, you could probably just buy a new car, drive into your tire, and then buy another new car and drive until you're tired of it. And so it has a bit for the sim lover, and it has a bit for the arcade lover. You don't have to go down that rabbit hole of customize and tweak your car. But they give you some tweaking options if that's your cup of tea.
Indeed. Well, as it stands, $40 on Wreckfest, what do you say?
I think it's an easy purchase. It's a buy for sure. And again, if you... It's odds are likely that you have not experienced a game like this, given the age of some folks that are probably listening to the show. So this would be a good way to get your foot in the door and say, what the heck is the deal with all these people who just like wrecking cars? You can come and find out firsthand just how fun it is, especially since it's not your car.
Yeah.
You can wreck it, pause it, restart it, get a brand new car.
Hell yeah.
Imagine me taking my actual car to a demo, a destruction derby. You only get one run there because I can't afford to repair that thing. It's done.
Can't just respawn in real life.
Video games inspire people to do crazy things. Yeah, destruction derby inspired me to do crap. It inspired me to cherish my car. I can see how much, I can see how much the damage looks in person and not to worry about my real car getting that kind of damage.
Oh, man. Well, speaking of racing games, there's another one we have to talk about. That is called MXGP 2019, the official motocross video game developed and published by Milestone, released August 27th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $49.99. Experience the excitement of the 2019 season for the first time in the series. Race an official MX team. Share your gaming experience with the community thanks to the track editor and the waypoint mode, and practice in the playground to learn to ride like a real pro. Purnell, tell us about MXGP 2019.
Well, MXGP 2019 is very much whereas Wreckfest was very, well, arcadey in the sense of just free flowing, going nuts. I will say this game is on the other end of that spectrum. You are driving motorcycles through various courses, usually like a great, typically like a Grand Prix mode, where it's essentially, I want to say, like 32 races, because it's like they break it up into two halves, and each half has a series of 8 races broken up into 2 races. This is like a weird math class. But anyway, the point is a lot of races lined up.
Yeah.
And you start out by customizing a racer. And the customization, I will say, they're not too broad, but there's enough there that a guy can just come up with like a decent thing. Though, honestly, I didn't notice a woman option on there. So if you're going to be living candidly, or I just didn't find the right freaking button. But basically, you're going to customize a racer, get them out on there, and then you have to choose whether or not you want to have a sponsor or race with a team. If you race with a sponsor, the sponsor will likely have you do... Actually, I didn't really bother with the sponsor, but what I read about the sponsor was that they pretty much make you ride with a specific type of bike, and they kind of inflict more control over what your options are on the course. Whereas a team, they let you choose a different bike here and there, but they don't let you tweak it as much as you would like, because they have their own team specs that go into the bike's configurations. But anyway, either way, whichever one you choose, you eventually end up going into a series of races where you have to pretty much come in first place or as close to first as you can possibly freaking get. And typical racing fare in that regard. But the gameplay is where it shines. And I think the gameplay, though I suck literal balls at it, the gameplay is honestly very nice in this game. So it is more simish. And actually, before I even get into that, I want to make one random joke comment. So when you start a race in this game, the first thing that comes out is there's like a sort of like speed start you can get, where you have to hold the clutch, lean forward, and hold the gas. And then when the gate drops that your bike can leave, you have to let off the clutch and then floor it. This is called a hole shot. Now, many, many, many years ago on the N64, there was a game called Excite Bike 64. And when you played that game, which was a bike game in a similar vein, whenever there was a certain moment where the announcer would say the name of your character and go, "With the hole shot. Sarah Sugar Hill with the hole shot." And my friends, I used to make fun of, like, what the hell is he saying? Where's the hole shot?
We the hole just shot, it's not the start. It's kind of the start. That the good start that you're getting is helping you get the hole shot. The hole shot is basically around the first corner or two corners. You'll see a white line on the ground, and whoever gets to that first, basically the leader out of the gate, wins the hole shot. That's the hole shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear that, because I'm learning it. Because honestly, when I heard the guy say, like, "Wait a minute, hole shot, what the hell?" But education aside, once you nail the hole shot or not, you are essentially driving around this course with 21 other racers. The course gets very freaking packed. And honestly, it takes some real getting used to manipulate and maneuver this bike around this course effectively, because you have a front brake, a rear brake. You have to pretty much know how to, like, when to brake, which, using which brake, when to go on like specific turns and how sharply and all that, like normal driving essentially, but on a bike for some reason it feels much more strict and difficult. And the game is also a bit strict in regards to, like, if you go off the side of the course, it will actually start a countdown. If you don't get back on the track on time, it just already says nope, respawn you. And by that point, you've probably lost a good number of positions on the race. And if you even so much as feather tap a wall or a barrier, you will probably fly off your bike and have to also be respawned. So the game honestly demands that you get pretty decent in order to even so much as come close to doing okay on these races. But with that, once as you're getting used to it, and when you do get used to it, it's actually a lot of fun to do the races. I enjoy running them. And I also like the fact that as bikes go around laps, the trails that the bikes left on the ground stick around also. So if it's
dude,
a particular,
I love that too. It's such a small little touch, but it's such a neat touch.
Oh yeah, and I mean your bike, you do feel the bumps. You know, feel them. You know, figuratively that's playing the game, but you feel the bumps when you come across them. Just like if you cut across a bunch of bike paths that have been made, your bike, well, you will feel that in your bike as you're trying to maintain your balance. As you're going over a bunch of miniature moguls, essentially. I enjoy that. I enjoy the mud splatter that kicks up whenever you drive through muddy spots on the track. And it's pretty much in your field of vision too. It's just a lot of, and that's a lot of little nice touches there. And the actual environments themselves are actually very nice and bright. So it's not like you're just driving through like these very drab atmospheres or locales. It's actually sunny or nightfallish, but usually sunny and just nice looking. I enjoy it. I will say the races themselves, even when you pick a quick race though, pretty freaking long. So,
yeah, that's probably my gripe with the game as well, is the length of some of the races. Even on like the quickest race, you're still looking at 8 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the bare minimum, like absolute quickest race that you can do.
So I hope you really like racing on that bike, because you're going to be doing that course for a bit, and you're going to have to maintain that first place position for a long time. Prepare yourself. But what I will say, the thing that I actually found most appealing about this game and what I ended up liking is they have a mode that, from what I read, didn't exist on previous games, which is called the Playground mode. And what Playground mode is, it's an open environment. It's always the same open environment. So you can't just like, and I tried this, like restart the game a few times and see if it would create a brand new playground to run around. No, it's always the same playground. But it's a huge open environment that includes multiple, three or so mini courses on it. You can just kind of drive to and start a race if you want. You can also drive to these things called waypoint stations. And when you go to the waypoint station, you can trigger it. And then from there, sort of drive around and drop new waypoints. And then eventually a finish line, and create a makeshift track within the playground that you can then run around it, which I think is pretty cool. There's a few challenges that open up. My favorite being one that's kind of almost like a downhill slalom, where once you kick it off, you have to drive as fast as you can through a bunch of like ribboned gates. And if you get to the bottom, it's trying to give you time and it feels good. But it's all meant to help you get a bearing for how to drive the bike. Unfortunately, there's no like cool instructions that says, hey, if you want to make sharp turns, maybe let off on the rear brake and just accelerate and pull your bike. Because I don't know what they want me to do with that. I suck at that. But it would have been nice if they had stuff like that there. But just the general feeling of being able to say, I want to drive my bike around and get a feel for this bike. I want to be able to feel comfortable going into the primary modes and doing well. Because as we said earlier, races aren't short in this game. So it's kind of nice to be able to say, I'm going to practice here. When I feel confident in getting back into the game, I can just start up a race and go in with my foot on the pedal, ready to roll. But I spent most of my time, I'll admit, in the playground doing those mock races, and it also just triggering a Grand Prix, which the game will also let you do within the playground. You say, I want to do a Grand Prix right now, and just start racing dudes. It's fun. Mm-hmm. I honestly found that very enjoyable. This game does also have like heavy customization for your bikes if that's your wheelhouse. It is not mine, so I'll let all those things be default. It'll all get out, but you can tweak the acceleration. You can tweak the weight of the bike. You can tweak the gears on the bike. Like you can say, I want gear 1 to stop at 30 miles an hour and gear 2 to stop at 45 miles. You can do all that mess. I have never seen a thing allow you to actually tweak individual gears for top speeds. It is really nuts. I mean, they do thankfully these have, from what I noticed, like sort of pre-established settings. So you say, for example, going back to the gear setting, you could go in and manually tweak all the gears, or you could just go to the bottom and say, I want long, medium, short. And by picking those, the game will say, you want long gear stride. So like the starting gear will be farther off on each one. So you have to accelerate longer to get to the next gear level. And the basically saying like each gear has a higher top speed, which will accelerate slower. You could do that, or you can, again, go in and manually. So you could say, I want to accelerate fast in gear 1 and gear 2. And then when I get to gear 3, it's going to accelerate slowly, but I have a huge top speed there. You know, you can do all that kind of stuff. There's a lot of tweaking available to each and every one of these freaking bikes. I will say, though, there is a flaw, an annoying fault in this game. We've mentioned it previously, but I think it's personally even worse in this game.
Really?
And that's the load time. Oh, God, yes. And
I thought they were worse in Wreckfest. I agree that they're not good in MXGP. I think Milestone has always had an issue with load times in their games, it seems. But I thought Wreckfest was worse.
I don't know. But I will say this, too. I feel like since this game requires more of a need for you to hit those first place and second and third place hits, I was more inclined to want to use restart here, too, which meant, whoop, gotta wait it out. Whoop, gotta wait it out every single freaking time. And if you're in playground and you want to go, say, start up a waypoint mode, gotta wait out that load time. And you want to do a challenge, gotta wait out that load time. So it stacks. It builds up on you. And that's thing, like, crap, just let me do some background loading or something. But I guess you really can't do a ton of background loading with that because you have to trigger the event in the first place. So
that's my general issue with this game in general, is just how much downtime there seems to be, or how frequently I'm saying, let me do something new. Like, I avoided the season this year because the quickest event that they have there is a 2-race weekend, which means you have to do the same racetrack twice in a row, which doesn't seem like a problem. But if you're doing an 8-minute race and you just did 5 laps on that course, you don't really want to do it again. You kind of just want to move on to the next race. And I wish there was an option for a single race weekend in the season mode for the game. I would have spent a lot more time. I just played Grand Prix. I just did each of the courses in Grand Prix and raced that way. That and Track Editor. Oh my God, Track Editor is fun.
You gotta tell me about that, because I haven't done anything with the Track Editor.
Yeah, you can design your own courses in the game. I've made 5 of them so far. There's an achievement for validating 5. So I had to earn that one. I made one shaped like S, M, and L.
Nice. So
you'll have to fire it up and give it a download and try racing on there.
But you have to hop a mogul to go to from the S to the M.
You'll see. You'll see.
I will.
I'll let you check it out.
All right, then. I'll get the top time on, and nobody will laugh at me anymore, because I'll be the king. I'll be the king, baby.
But yeah, Track Editor is really cool. It gives it so much more replayability. There's already a good number of courses there, and it literally just released. So, you know, pre-release people were making a couple of nice ones. I have mine. My terrible course is there that you could check out. But overall, what were you going to say?
I want to say that I can't imagine that they have it in there yet, but I think it'd be cool if they decided, you know, let's just update with a patch, and it allowed you to actually make like absurd courses too. Like, you could have like those Excite Bike style super moguls where you just drive up this high hill and just drive off the side. I think something like that would be pretty cool for a game like this, because like, okay, now you've done all the sim type stuff. Yeah, it has some ridiculous options for the Track Editor, so you can just do some wild and crazy courses, too.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Track Editor's not that crazy, but it does let you make some cool courses, and it's infinite replayability as long as people keep making courses.
Here's the hoping they do, at least until 2020.
Yeah, but $50 on MXGP 2019, what do you say?
Honestly, I think it's a solid buy if you are interested in a bike racing game. And this is another case where I was like, I know there's like Ride, but aside from Ride, I can't think of too much competition there. So you may well be in the market for such a bike game. So I would go with a bike.
Awesome. I agree. I think this is one of the better outings that I've played from them. I just wish that I could do a single race weekend in season mode. And I wish the loading times were better. Other than that, I really enjoyed it.
Upcoming patch. Come on, baby.
Fingers crossed. But one last game for you to talk about is called Crystar, developed by Furyu Corporation, published by Spike Chunsoft, released August 27th on PS4 and Steam for $59.99. For When I Weep, Then I Am Strong, Battle Through Purgatory is ready to help save her sister in this action RPG. Switch freely between 4 playable characters and uncover each one of their past to see the sorrows they have endured. Pernell, tell us about Crystar.
Well, he just told me that it's pronounced Crystar.
That's my guess.
I've been calling it Crystar this entire time. In other words, I've been jokingly referring to this as Rystar's depressed younger brother. And I am honestly perfectly cool with that. I'm never changing it. It even makes sense to call it Crystar by virtue of one of the main gameplay elements in the game, which I'll get into in a few.
See, I was going with Crystal Star, so Crystar.
Now, see, I can make that would make sense too. But there is a very key mechanic in this game that lends it to be thinking as Crystar. And that is the fact that while you are playing this game, crying, actual crying, plays a very large role in the game, which is very weird, but also works. So, as you play this game, you are essentially Rei, whatever her last name is, because I'm really bad with Japanese last names. But she and her sister were pulled down into purgatory by someone that goes by the name of Anamnesis, and through a series of weird events, this is the beginning, so this isn't a spoiler, Rei kills her sister by accident and is now freaked out and in need of actually rescuing her before she goes through the process of rebirth. So she makes a deal with some demons and becomes something called an executor. And the goal for this executor is to acquire a number of ideas, any way you want to freaking pronounce the word idea. She needs to collect a number of these so she can use them to do something called revival on her sister to prevent her from being reborn as a new entity with her soul. So this is done by taking on a series of missions, or as the game calls them, ordeals for the demons, while you're running through purgatory in a hack and slash fashion to fulfill a request of the demon. Typically, a request is going to involve you beating the crap out of a boss in the level. So gameplay consists of using a weak attack and a strong attack to chain combo attacks. But in addition to that, you will eventually also acquire special attacks that can be mapped to the front face button. You hold down the trigger and then press one of the face buttons, you'll perform that move. Moves toss SP, which can be regained by attacking enemies to boost the gauge up. There are no items that will just refill SP, so attacking guys is the only way to get it up again. So, and again, I'm kind of okay with that. I like the idea of having to actually do some work to actually get your SP gauge back up. Eventually, you will also come across other playable characters throughout the story. And when you get those characters, they come with their own item, their own attack styles, their own special moves, and their own HP and SP gauges. And you can switch between them all freely by using the cross pad, which is actually kind of cool, because you can actually swap one person out and then fight for a bit while they kind of do a slight recover. And then you can put them back in and say, okay, there we go. And though I could not quite determine if it was happening because of this or if it was just something I was densely not noticing, if you swap a person out and then over time eventually swap a person back in, I've noticed occasionally getting attack bonuses, like a brief one, when the person comes in. So it's almost like letting them rest on the sidelines and then come back and say, okay, I'm ready to go. 20% attack bonus. And you start wailing on go. One last thing to mention about the gameplay mechanics is that you also end up getting a tier gauge. So as you are running around beating the jar of guys or getting the tar beaten out of you, you will fill this tier gauge up. Once it maxes out, you can press the left trigger button to summon your guardian spirit to attack with you in unison against the different monsters on the field. And that allows you to do additional damage via combos to them. And eventually you can also push like that bumper trigger before the tier gauge runs out to do a super move to do exponentially more damage. Funnily enough, if you would like to get that gauge up faster, you can also just press the left bumper or trigger, okay, which of the two, and you will just start crying and filling the tear gauge up on your own. But by doing the crying mechanism, you will leave yourself quite vulnerable to damage because you're literally walking around crying. And, well, yeah, you shouldn't do that. Honestly, I rarely ever use that mechanic because I had no desire to just walk around crying on the map and leave myself vulnerable to damage. I built it up quickly enough just by mauling dudes. Now, as you're going through levels, you will occasionally come across a monster that is red. It's a normal monster, but they're red. And they might even have like some dialogue like, oh, this person, I wanted a sweet woman or whatever the hell they'll say. These are special revenants. And if you defeat them, they will leave behind something called a torment. Basically, an idea that they held on to, which let them become malignant spirits, which you will then take onto yourself by picking it up. When you pick up a torment, you will take a stat detriment, usually a percentage decrease in your defense or your attack power or what have you. And you're forced to carry that torment or carry that burden around the dungeon with you. Every time you kill one, it stacks. You get a second torment, which means now you have another decrease, another decrement, and another decrement, up to a max of 10 different decrements.
Ugh.
It's honestly not as bad as it sounds, because honestly, as I'm collecting, I was like, I just want the torment. I'll deal with it. I'll just make it work. And the reason why I wanted the torment is because you need torment to actually get new equipment for your characters. Because unlike a normal game, like of this type, your equipment isn't like, I want to equip the wacky sword or the buster armor. You were equipped something called sentiments. And the sentiments are created by exiting purgatory at the end of a mission, going home, and crying. So
yeah, I'm going to go with Crystar on this one.
Yeah, you're right. It's totally Crystar.
Yeah.
You pretty much you leave purgatory, and then you have to go through a process called purifying sentiment. And this allows you to take all the torment that you picked up while you were going through the dungeon and just kind of bawling it out. Essentially, it's literally just crying it out. And as you do that, they become solidified sentiments, which you can then use to equip your characters for attack bonuses, defense bonuses, and also like ailment resistances and like paralysis resistance or confusion resistance. As you acquire these, you'll get a bunch of them that will just stack up. Like you might find one called Out of My Way, and it'll be like five of them in your inventory, usually called Out of My Way One. This will have an attack, a defense, or defense, depending on if it's an attack weapon or defense thing. And it will also have 0, 1, or 2 sub-effects that can be attached to it. And the way to make these things stronger or carry over those attached abilities is you can take multiples of these abilities along with a few fragments you can find throughout the dungeon crawls and then fuse them together to create more powerful versions of them. So we go from being Out of My Way to Out of My Way 2 to Out of My Way 3 to Out of My Way End. And that's the max that item can be buffed up. Which means that lends itself to being a bit of grinding coming into play if you want to get maxed out specific items or pretty much just getting a full collection of maxed out gear. You're going to be doing that, though I did not. I said, screw it. I'll just work with what I get and then fuse what I got and go from there. But that is something that's available to the player should they so choose. Funny enough, this game is a pretty straightforward flow. You pretty much go into a dungeon, beat the tar of a few guys. You might get some exposition on some of the characters or the plot. You complete the scenario. You come out of purgatory. You make a phone call or two to one of your companions in the game to drive the story and the plot forward. And then you go back into purgatory by choosing another place to go to and taking care of business. I do like the fact that when you're out of purgatory in your bedroom, you can pet your dog. I have no idea what it's supposed to do or if it has an ultimate purpose, but you can pet the dog. I think people were catching on to the fact that people like petting dogs in games.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. Because I kid you not, I don't know what it does in the game, but I pet that dog every time I had a chance. It was just something I wanted to do. But I honestly enjoyed that aspect of the game. I enjoyed the aspect of even running through purgatory, and I enjoyed the premise of the game. I liked the story. And I liked where it was going. I liked meeting the different characters that came up because, first of all, purgatory is just a cool premise for me in a game. I like any game that involves dealing with purgatory or going through the seven circles of hell or whatever. So this game was right up my alley in that regard. And I like the idea of actually dealing with depression, even though it can make like a weird gameplay mechanic. Because, for example, the torments start out feeling like they're more personal. But then as you go through, it's just like, okay, I need to cleanse the torment to get the sentiments to get the gear. Like it just became a game, gameplay mechanic. But I like the fact that the premise existed at all. And at least for that period of time, it resonated. It's like, oh, that's pretty cool. You have to actually work through the torment to get stronger through the focus of getting sentiment items. I like that. But I honestly found myself enjoying those things. The only things that did kind of irk me, though, was less, I guess, the fault of the game and more about how the genre itself has progressed over the years, is that the dungeons themselves. So the environments for the dungeons look really cool. The music in the dungeons is very nice. The voice work is also good, too. However, the dungeons are the usual stream of corridor, rectangle, or maybe rectangle with some bites taken out of the sides. But anyway, it's corridor, rectangle, beat some dudes. Corridor, rectangle, beat some dudes. The corridor might be curved a little, but ultimately still it's a corridor, wreck some dudes till you get to the gate to go to the next floor. And wash, rinse, repeat. Also, early on, for sure, at least for the first two dungeons, the enemy variety is kind of lacking. You'll be fighting the same kind of hulking dude over and over again, same flower over and over again, same little carpet flying thing over and over again. And thankfully, it opens up a bit more in like the third environment because once I got there, the game introduced like 3 or 4 new monsters within the first stage of that environment. So I was like, yes, give me new freaking monsters to fight. I need this. So once I started getting more enemies to fight and had to come up with new strategies where like, you know, I'd be a charging monster, but also a guy who does like slams on the ground. I have to actually kind of plan around the fact that I know this guy could charge off screen. I got to watch out for him. So I was enjoying that more. But early on, I had to slog past the easier guys who showed up way too often. Also, enemies are sponges in this game for damage. Most specifically, the heavier guys. So since you do so much fighting in the game, you're fighting the same guys often, you're going to find yourself having to ring out some sponges more often than you might like.
Yeah.
Don't skimp on the special attacks. Exploit the living daylights out of them because you want to kill guys as fast as possible and move the hell on. And since you also need to level up in the game, it does you a disservice to not fight the guys and move through, because what's going to end up happening is you might think you're saving yourself time now. What's going to ultimately end up happening is you're going to be underleveled with gear that sucks because you're avoiding all the revenants that actually drop sentiments or torment to give you sentiments to equip to your guys. So I guess there is definitely room for the occasional juke and jodge, but ultimately you don't want to avoid guys because you'll get that invulnerability creep if you do. So just suck it up and fight things. And honestly, as long as you're not tired of the actual enemies, the combat is fun. It feels good to hit guys and beat the tar out of them, and it feels good to actually summon the super guy every once in a while too. But I mean, honestly, I found the game enjoyable, but I do wish, really wish, these companies, I get maybe it's a budget thing, maybe it's a time thing, I don't know, but please get more creative with your dungeon layouts. I beg you, come on. Even if it involves some kind of dopey repeated puzzle that factors in to make it just do so, I don't know. I mean, save that for roguelikes. I accept that with those, but not with this kind of stuff. Give me some dungeon design. But other than that minor gripe, I enjoyed playing the game, and I enjoyed manipulating the different characters, and I enjoyed seeing the storyline. They even deal with a few heavy concepts in the game, which I will always appreciate, whether you nail it or you don't nail it. I will always appreciate a developer seriously attempting to put some heavy themes in the storytelling, as opposed to just something as simple as bad guys need to be defeated by good guys. Hit them hard until they don't talk anymore. I like the idea of games actually going a little bit above and beyond and discussing things, because, hey, I was a kid once and now I'm a grown-ass man. And sometimes I want to have grown-ass themes in my games. Especially, more specifically, storytelling. There's room for happy-go-lucky Yoshi hopping, too. But, hey, give me some maturity and give me some interesting mature plots in my games.
Yeah.
And mature doesn't have to mean Omega Labyrinth. In fact, I beg of you, please don't make it just be about Omega Labyrinth. Do other stuff. Do actual mature themes, please.
Not just fan service.
Not just fan service. Give me some mature plots, you know. And I'm good for them. Just make an attempt at that. And I'm glad that they did that with this game. There are a few of those that crop up.
Well, as it stands, $60, what do you say?
I think as long as you're okay with the thing I mentioned regarding the dungeon layout and the occasional damage sponge, I would go with a buy it, because everything else about this package is quality.
Awesome. Sounds good. Do you have a pick of the week out of your three?
I'm going to go with Wreckfest, honestly, specifically because it's fun and it's unique compared to other games of the genre these days. It stands out.
Awesome. Yeah, I loved Wreckfest, too. I wanted to say I love Wreckfest again.
That's my pick of the week.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. But, Cornell, always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Not just say farewell to summer, because I know it's supposed to end after Labor Day, but as far as this week's concerned, it's gone, baby. It's already chilling up.
All right, moving on. Chris Taylor's here. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
How's the Skyrim going?
Skyrim's going good. We finished one of my chatters actually called my most recent run, my Cutlerist run, what I should have been calling it this whole time. He called it Fork Knife.
Fork Knife.
So I've been playing Fork Knife. Indeed, as of, of this recording, as of last Sunday, we did it. We beat Alduin with cutlery naked.
I can't believe you did it. How? Like,
it's all about how that crafting, baby. How do you
kill a dragon with a fork and a knife?
I actually didn't even think that this would happen, but I ended up being actually kind of OP. Like, he went down pretty quick. Anybody that wants to check my Twitter for Sunday, will maybe I'll even make it sticky. I highlighted a 2-minute video of myself beating the dragon up. And just for the fact that the video is 2 minutes long lets you know how quickly he goes down.
Oh, Jesus.
I figured it out. What can I say?
You were insane.
Ah, well. And that's not even with the book. Now with the book, I can work on my completionist run, which I think I'm starting Wednesday. And I even, off the clock, started, that is to say, without streaming, because I'm doing it on the Switch version, I'm trying to figure out a level one run. That is to say, beating the game without gaining a single level.
How?
I don't know. I'll figure it out. I don't have any grand strategy yet, but I know that all the missions in the main quest are not level-based, so that means, you know, because speedrunners have shown that, but I don't speedrun, so I want to make it a legit build that you can, like, really muscle your way through without applying any perk points.
You're ridiculous, man. That is insane.
Oh, man. Not as insane as today's release, like, catalog. Like, I got two games today that I finally get to check off the list of games I've been waiting for more than a decade for.
Which two?
I picked up Collection of Mana, of
course. Nice. The physical, because digital's been out for a little bit.
Yeah, the physical version. It's actually becoming to where I need to start getting more physical versions because it saves me on memory. Because doing these reviews for a few years now, I've definitely filled up a 400 gigabyte card on my Switch.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I had to clear up a few games to get Pillars of Eternity on there. I think I mentioned that in the review. And the other one is frickin' Metal Wolf Chaos.
Sweet.
XD just came out physical today, and I happened to be there, and I picked up a copy. So, yeah, I'm really excited about Metal Wolf Chaos. Very glad that that's now out there for the U.S. to enjoy. And yeah, at a low price, too, which is nice.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it has been a pretty crazy week because we just covered Wreckfest and MXGP, which just released this week as well. Mm. I know Bard's Tale 4 just came out today. Control just came out today, which we'll be talking about on next episode. It's nice. It's a crazy week.
Good times. It's good times.
It is good times.
But I've been waiting on Metal Wolf Chaos for about 14 years now, 15 years. And been waiting on Seiken Densetsu 3 for, it's been over 20 years. I think 24 years.
Something crazy. No, it's been a while.
Like 22 years, I think. A long time.
Been a and hot I
finally,
minute.
Finally can play it without an emulator. So, yeah. Oh, well, and I guess
like you had a good week.
I guess one of the games on this list is one I've been anticipating for a while too.
Which one?
It'll Do.
It sounds like a great segue to get into the reviews.
That's me writing my segue into the review.
Because the first game on the list to talk about is called It'll Do, developed and published by Ludosity, released August 15th on the Switch for $9.99. Adventuress It'll Do and her sidekick Tipsy crash onto a strange island filled with loot and mysterious inhabitants. Quickly dawns on the duo that this might become their biggest adventure yet. It'll Do boils down the classic adventure formula until there's only fun left. Chris, tell us about it.
That's an interesting description. Okay, so It'll Do, you might remember that when Nicholas put this game, the sequel out, some time ago, I guess it was almost a year ago now, right? Maybe about a year.
It's been a while because that was when Nicholas was still talking to us.
Oh, get back on the horn with us, Nicholas. We're cool, I swear.
I've been
buying all your games anyway, so I actually own It'll Do 2 Plus on physical now, so they have been given money from me. Anyway. Specifically my girlfriend, but anyways. So yeah, It'll Do is the first adventure that predates It'll Do 2 Plus. And this one originally, well, I mean, it came out everywhere kind of thing. But as far as like consoles go, it came out on the Wii U. And after I played It'll Do 2, I was like, well, where can I find the original game? And so I looked it up and saw that it was in the eShop for the Wii U, also for $10. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's going on my wish list. Might be a minute before I give the Wii U any of my money. And I think it'll be a while still, because they're starting to close down the shop on that, right? Like, they're not going to be taking debit cards or something?
In Europe.
Well, yeah. You know who's next.
Yeah.
So.
We didn't even discuss that on the show yet. That's like breaking news.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look at that. Look at me being.
In Europe, they're not going to be taking funds on the Wii U or the 3DS anymore.
Ooh, dark times.
Yes.
This is why I was always like wary of eShops and digital stores, digital storefronts, is because, you know, you can't
eventually
buy.
Eventually they close
and the games just disappear forever if they weren't very popular at the time. You can't just rediscover them later, you know. But I mean, not like that really benefits publishers. That only benefits gamers. In that sense, like discovering a Nintendo game that you didn't know about, like nowadays, doesn't help anybody that made it back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so yeah, it'll do. So that was the one I wanted, and then it came out on Switch, and so I was very excited to try and, you know, cover it. And sure enough, this game plays a lot like the original, but with one glaring difference.
The original
Switch release. The original sequel to this game. It's a My Own Grandpa kind of situation, I think. I've had a lot of coffee. Anyways. So, yeah, the sequel. It is different than the sequel in one glaring way, and that is that the sequel has a... the original, that is, has the look of a cel-shaded 3D game. It's kind of pseudo 3D, kind of tilts the world a little bit and lets you, you know, walk up and down it. This one is completely flat. So, you know, it actually does have more of that classic Zelda look to it, because it's a flat map and you're just walking along it. And the character, interestingly, she has shorter hair in this game, so I guess they just gave her longer hair for the second game because she hasn't gotten it cut. She does have that kind of perpetually unkempt appearance, and so that's actually kind of a neat, I can't remember words.
I'm not sure what you're aiming for.
Continuity.
All right.
It's a continuity. So yeah, that's a neat little continuity. So the world is flat, you are flat, and I really, really appreciate the look that they decided to animate the whole thing. Not the whole thing, but the characters, like enemies and Idle. I guess her first name is Idle. And her companion, of course, in kind of a squiggle vision. Like, it looks like a hand animated thing, in that they, you know, the lines move slightly as she moves, and I think it's a really cool look. The actual interface, so the story is like similar to the second original sequel prequel, where you know, in It'll Do 2 Plus, you are supposed to find the 8 pieces of your raft that has broken apart so you can leave an island. Well, in this one, you also crash land on an island, but it's instead that you have to find, a certain MacGuffin, within a nearby castle, for a shop owner to sell you a raft so that you can leave the island. And so, what ends up happening is that you keep going into this castle and, you know, getting a certain amount of money in a treasure chest after solving a few puzzles, of course, because this is a puzzle-based adventure game. And then you purchase an item, and then he actually, instead of giving you the item, he teleports you to the place where you can get the item, which ends up being a dungeon in and of itself. So the first one I collected was a fire sword, to replace my stick, because It'll Do uses a stick. And, you know, the fire sword works like the stick works. If you hit something that is on fire with the stick is then on fire, and you can use that to solve puzzles, such as igniting bombs to blow up, you know, blocks so that you can get through, things like that. And the sword just does that without the middleman. And so, you know, obviously there's a ton of situations where you need that, and there's no fire handy. So then you have to go through an entire dungeon to get the fire sword, and then you come back, and then you go back to the main palace, get, you know, make even more progress, find even more money, and then you purchase the next item, which is a magical, like, wand that creates a solid block that can be pushed around, or if you have that block on the ground, use the second button to zap anything that can be zapped, and it will then be teleported into the place of that block. So it ends up being like teleportation puzzles, some of which involving mirrors and things like that. So, you know, you basically, the way this game goes is that you just keep going into like these mini dungeons, obtaining these items, and then going back to the main dungeon and kind of going through it again, like I said, you know, like a Zelda style type thing. But going through it again, this time being able to actually get through different obstacles that you got to see before but couldn't get through. And for the price that this game is, it's definitely a hearty adventure. And once again, aesthetically beautiful. I really love looking at this game. It's the same exact thing as in It'll Do 2 Plus. It's just really charming the way everything looks. The character is very endearing because she's very, like... you know, she's a no-nonsense kind of person. But, well, she's kind of like nonsense, but also serious. For instance, there's a scene that I really like. It's the first time that you pick up a heart, which, you know, of course, your life is Zelda-style. It's in a heart. Well, it's a picture of a heart. And the way that you get more hearts is that you actually find other pieces of paper to tape to the first piece of paper. And once you get four, then you can draw another heart on it. So I really like that move.
Yeah, that but like, was cute.
When she finds a heart for the first time, there's a scene between her and Tipsy, who is her flying weasel companion, who always has a red bottle of something that's never quite explained. I don't know. Maybe he's imbibing or something. I don't know. But anyway, like, she's just sitting there munching on this heart and got like red stuff all over her face and everything. And he's like, why are you eating that? That was on the ground. And she's like, oh, it's fine.
So, 5 second, you know, rule.
Yeah. That actually is the joke. She says 5 second rule.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's a cute game.
Yeah, it is cute. I'm charmed to pieces by it. And I really, cannot wait to see the end of it so that I can then go back into It'll Do 2 Plus and then finish that one. Nice. So
$10 on It'll Do. What do you say?
Oh yeah, obviously buy this one. I said, you know, I gave It'll Do 2 high praise for being like the kind of Zelda game that I think, you know, that I actually like more than Zelda. And this one is just like it. The puzzles are very well crafted. I think that they'll really keep you busy without being too, you know, esoteric. Like, you know, it's pushing blocks around and it's like, you know, things like that. It's definitely a gamer of any kind of skill can get through this game, but it's really that I just like being in the world and I like the characters a lot. So I'm really, really glad that the first game came out on Switch. And so I'm telling everybody to go support this and go purchase it. It's, I mean, it's a great price for this type of adventure. So, you know, go get it and go get It'll Do 2 Plus as well.
And if you're on other platforms, you could get It'll Do Plus as well. Sadly, It'll Do, it looks like, is only going to be on the Switch. I asked if there were any Xbox plans for it, and they said no, but their next game is planned for all consoles.
Okay. So
it looks like It'll Do is just going to be Switch only. And who knows? Maybe it'll take off and sell really well, and they'll think it'll be worth bringing to other platforms.
Yeah, it's to be hoped. I think it's, you know, and I could see that because, I mean, it's... the Switch being portable, I mean, it's a perfect little portable adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Considering you can save from room to room, like, as soon as you get one room, you can just save it and come back to it later. And yeah, it's not so complex that you'll, like, lose your place or anything.
I'm still hoping we see it on Xbox.
Yeah, for sure. Because I'm hoping to.
I like everything on Xbox.
And hey, if that controller thing that they patented is what we think it is, then it'll be portable too.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. But next game to talk about is called Grand Brick Shooter, developed and published by Intra Games, released August 29th on Switch and Steam for $9.99. Challenge yourself to a new kind of bullet hell fusion shooter. Change your aircraft to get new skills just when you need them against advancing foes. Aim for the top spot. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, Grand Prix shooter.
Is it Brie then?
No, it's Brix. I don't know.
I don't know either.
There's no voices in the game, so we're left to just think about it. But when I see those letters together, I'm like, oh, Grand Prix.
Yeah, probably. Like this is probably the second game tonight that I'm wrong on the pronunciation for.
Oh no, so. It's a cheese-based racing game.
Yes,
Grand Prix. Anyways. No, it's Grand Brick Shooter, I'm pretty sure. Okay, so this game is one of my favorite genre things, and that is to say it is a scrolling horizontal shoot-em-up. Some people call them shmups. Some people judge those people, and I don't like those people. But anyways, but this one is horizontally scrolling, so in that case you would think Gradius or Darius or... Rolling Gunner, which I talked about sometime before, even though I'm pretty sure I just got the name wrong. So yeah, this one is in that tradition. Funny enough, the thing that it reminded me the most of is a Wii game called Blastworks, which I don't think a lot of people played, but it was a really cool like horizontal shooter where you could create the like it had a really robust level creator where you could create all the enemies and the ship and then upload them online, which was hugely exciting in 2006 or 2007. And of course people did that to immediately break every copyright law and trademark and make like a Sonic the Hedgehog shoot 'em up and all kinds of bizarre stuff. It was a good time. But what was appealing about it was that it had the bullet hell aspect, but the graphics are scaled down to the bare undressed polygons. However, the whole thing was still moving in like 60 frames a second. So it had this like smoothness and this speed, but also had like I said, an undressed look that the detail was in more of the just the what the polygons would form, like a super fancy N64 game, I guess. And this one kind of has that going for it. So you play as a little ship, like a little pod almost, that can do one shot, like just straight ahead. And throughout the levels, which by the way have really nice backgrounds, like they just have skies with clouds and stuff, and the clouds actually look really good, which is kind of rare. But yeah, you're like shooting these enemy ships and stuff, and you will come across a different little kind of cargo pods that are sitting there in the level. And when you blast those open, then in there will be a kind of the exoskeleton for your pod ship, which will turn it into kind of a ship mech suit sort of thing. And each one of these there's five on the cover, but I'm pretty sure it's like between six and eight. I'd have to actually count them up. But yeah, it's like it's a variety of different ships that you then push the A button to put on the exoskeleton, and each one has a different like shot. So like you have the Phoenix, which has the like a spread shot that's really good, but it doesn't have anything, doesn't have much coming out of the front. So it's more like screen clearing for the diagonal stuff. And then you have the one that's called Big Brother because it has all the little option ships with it, which is kind of cool. And they all kind of sail out and like zap the enemies with lasers while you're back there kind of holding up the rear. Just all these different kind of things, and each one has like a different flavor to it. And the thing is that they actually, like if you destroy red enemies, like most enemies are blue, but the red enemies will actually, they'll have these gold things that they drop, and if you collect those, then your ship can level up, which of course will make its shots more powerful and spread out further and things like that. And the maximum level is 3. After which, it just gives you a power up every time, and like I said, every exoskeleton ship also has a bomb. Also, my cat's going crazy.
Hi, Wilfred.
Hi, Wilfred. But yeah, so once that happens, like, and the other thing is that in this game, unlike a lot of shmups, instead of getting one shot, you can take actually three hits, no matter how severe, before you blow up and have to start the level over. It doesn't just have continue spam, so you actually do really have to survive. But the thing
is, you gotta work for this one.
You gotta work for this one a little bit. But the cool thing is that if in the middle of the level, like, there's these cargo freights with all these with these exoskeleton ships on it, are spread out throughout the level, so you can actually end up changing your whole ship like three or four times, including in the middle of the boss fight. And every time you do, it resets your life. So you can then, if you've taken like two hits and you're on your last legs, and then you get another exoskeleton, then you actually go back to having three shots again. And the levels that you gain with each of these suits sticks, so it actually does behoove you to kind of try and reach the max level for all of them. But the cool thing
is a good word.
Thank you. It's one I like. But yeah, like if you die on the boss or on the or you know in the level or whatever and have to start over again, you do have free continues. It's just you have to do the whole level. And they'll kind of start you off with how you got to that level. So if you got there with like one hit left on a certain exoskeleton ship, then that's how you're going to start the level. So,
oh man.
Yeah. And then, you know, beyond that, it has a, you know, top scores mode, no online ranking or anything like that. It does have a gallery where you can look at the different, schematics of the different ships and each level of that ship and like see what the shot looks like up close, so you can really study what you've been picking up. Because what it eventually boils down to, because the game is actually fairly difficult, is that you're going to end up, you know, kind of favoring certain ships over others. So if you get like, you know, the big boy exoskeleton, I think that's what it's called, but it might be called something else. It's like the heavy, I guess. It's maybe it has heavy in the title. I don't remember. I can't remember names. But, you know, if you get one of the ones that's a favorite, but then you get Phoenix, but you don't want Phoenix, then you can just skip it and, like, just keep going. Again, unless you have, you know, only one shot left, then you're kind of doing a gamble there. But I found it to be challenging, but not unfair. Of course, bullet hells being what they are, it's it has a spectacle of bullets from bosses, and certainly you're going to have to get your twitchy thumbs out for this one. But like I said, I felt it was very rewarding. It's extremely fun. I really, really do enjoy playing this game. And, yeah, I mean, beyond that, there's, you know, I didn't beat it. That's for sure. But I'm definitely going to keep working on this one because I felt like it was very engaging. And I really like this gimmick of changing your ship like throughout the levels and not like having any kind of in between level stuff. It's just, you know, everything happens in the actual game.
Yeah. Well, $10. What do you say?
Oh, yeah. I definitely recommend this one to shooter fans for $10. It has, like I said, it's great response, great controls, great speed, great arrays of bullets. It's not going to be visually the most overwhelming thing, but I think that you're, you know, for $10, it's clearly quality. So yeah. I would definitely recommend plunking down for this one. And it is a good challenge, so... Yeah, got my hearty recommendation.
Awesome, sounds good. One final game for you to talk about is called Invasion of Alien X Earth in Crisis, developed and published by Double Drive Games, releasing August 29th on the Switch for $9.99. Aliens are on a terrifying Earth invasion tour. Your mission, fire artillery and protect the base from the enemy flagship. Repel the invaders, deploy weapons batteries delivered by drones wisely, and you can win. The planet's fate is in your hands. Earthlings, the counteroffensive starts now. Chris, tell us about it.
All right, Invasion of Alien X. This one is actually really interesting. So it is a combination of a rail shooter, that is to say you're moving a reticule around and shooting things just from... you know, the invisible gun behind the camera. It's that plus tower defense. So basically, you start the stage and you are in a set position. You don't move at all. You only move the reticule around and, you know, the crosshairs. and you have two different things that you can do. You can either use a regular shot, or you can use a kind of black hole vacuum move that sucks up all the enemies off the map in case of emergencies. It takes so long to charge that thing that you're likely only going to get to use it once in a level. So it's kind of like your big red button.
Nice.
Yes, so... Yeah, the goal is that basically, well, of course, this game has a very odd presentation. For one, the graphics are voxel graphics, which that's actually a word I know now. But that's basically where it looks like pixels if they were Legos. So everything kind of looks like it was made of Legos.
Nice.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really
voxel graphic, like Minecraft
mode. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's a little fancier than Minecraft. I don't know. I guess if it was a giant Minecraft thing, because it does have quite a lot of voxels. It's just definitely got that look to it. So yeah, it's the main enemy in the game, as far as I can tell, because I got several levels in, but I'm not sure if this ever changes. But it's a, it looks like a big kind of blender slash. Like one of those, like a gumball machine almost. looks a little bit like Tom Servo.
Nice.
And, yeah. And it is a, it contains within it a whole bunch of vegetables. And, these vegetables, I guess, are the aliens, and they come down, there's just different vegetable-based, things, beings, that, keep coming down persistently out of this thing every time it drops them off. And they slowly march towards your base, which, of course, your base is a little, planet Earth that's just sitting on top of a building. I don't know why. But, I don't know if that's the actual planet or if that just represents the planet or, 'cause you're on a planet, so... Anyway, but yeah, it, you know, each level is a different setting. You know, it's different, like hills and towns and things like that. Obstacles, of course, for the, and drop off points for the aliens. And so, like I said, the gumball machine of vegetable aliens, drops off a group of them, and then you have to make sure that they're destroyed before they get to your base. All the time, of course, shooting the actual mothership in order to blow it up, and that will end the level. And if your base blows up, of course, then you lose. So in order to get assistance on this, and this is where the tower defense type thing comes in, is that assistance is brought in through like these faster moving airplanes. I mean, depending on the level, they can get pretty fast. And basically, you shoot down the airplane, and it just automatically puts a turret gun somewhere in the level. You actually don't, I don't think you really get to choose. I think it might be slightly based on where you shoot down the plane, but they seem to have fixed locations that they go to. So the point is, because the whole thing is so frantic, you're trying to basically shoot your support down and get some support. While also paying attention to the hordes that are coming, through to your base. And also, like I said, you know, shooting down the mothership. And of course, at certain points, the mothership is going to stop. And the other thing is that the mothership has a force field that it's, or not a force field, a shield that it can sometimes put up. And then you just can't shoot it for a second. So, you have to pay attention to that too. So, and then eventually, like, it will, circle around your base and try to shoot a laser at it, and then you have a time, a certain amount of time, usually about 5 to 10 seconds, to shoot its power cable that's hanging out. That's the actual laser gun that it has, is the you know, the power plug. And if you can shoot that persistently enough for a few seconds, then it will then it won't do any damage to your base. Otherwise, it can take off like 25% of your base's damage, which is huge, and you don't want that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, pretty much it's that, and then it, and then you just repeat that, and the levels get up, you know, go harder and harder until, you just can't figure out what to do anymore, and you just have to end up playing the level over and over again until you get it, which that's kind of what happened to me. The, nice. Yeah, the soundtrack, interestingly enough, like, it has a kind of, like a, you know, butt rock kind of metal title screen. And then once you actually start the game, like, the actual battle theme to this game is just like this kind of silly accordion music. So, but this game never fails to be silly. It's definitely like got that thing going for it, which I always appreciate. I really like the way it looks. It's so bright and colorful, and like, even though the enemies and everything in it are like voxel, it's like you can tell that this thing coming at you is a bunch of grapes. And, you know, this apple walking towards you very slowly, like, definitely has that ponderousness of a heavy, you know, type of tank to it. Nice. So they really were able to put a bunch of details into this game that, by all accounts, shouldn't have, you know, by all rights, shouldn't have had as much detail in it. But it's fast, it's frantic, and it's very difficult. And, of course, you get different awards and achievements and medals for doing things, you know, really efficiently with what you're able to do. But ultimately, like I said, that's the entirety of the gameplay. Like, there's no other real modes or anything like that. Oh, and one last thing, and I always mention this when it comes up because I always have to dock for it, is that the movement of the crosshair / reticule, whatever, is not Y inverted, and there's no option to change it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I give this a little bit more leeway on that, because if you ever played Final Fantasy VII and you played through the rail shooter portion of that, it also didn't have invertible Y-axis. So having played that a million times, I was already used to moving a reticule around like this. So, you know, because it's not camera control, I forgive it a little bit, but please.
The options folks, still be there.
Yeah, please, folks. Invert Y control is an option, at least.
Yes.
I don't care if it's not default, as long as it's there.
Yeah. But $10 on Invasion of Alien X, what do you say?
Yeah, I think this one is really fun. I think that the thing that I most would have liked out of this game is multiplayer. A second reticule, that would have been great. But I can't fault them for that. $10, it's fantastic. So I would say, yeah, if you are into tower defense, or if you're into rail shooters, or if you just like a cool, goofy game to pass a controller around, then yeah, go ahead and get this one. There's nothing really wrong with it. So, I mean, $10 sounds like a deal.
Awesome. Sounds good. Chris, always a pleasure having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final words before we move on? Are you caught off guard because it's not the end of the show?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I there's more reviews to come, so I'm not capping off the whole thing. I'm just still thinking about that fork knife. But invert Y controls, folks. It's not hard.
All right. And finally, Jacob Garner's joining us. Jacob, how are you doing?
I'm doing mildly okay. How about you?
Doing all right. Ready to wrap the show up, get all this shit over with, and move on with my life.
Yeah.
That was depressing.
Oh. Well, that's okay.
That sounded like the words of a broken man.
It's all right. You'll just, you know, be alone in your living room surrounded by your cats. Oh, that's even worse. Hold on.
Life is awful. Nothing. Hooray.
Yeah, I got nothing for you.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to do?
Now, what are you going to do?
Well, son of a bitch.
I wonder what Rocky's up to.
I'm glad no one else knows what the hell we're talking about. Unless for some reason you went to Redner's in Wilkes-Barre.
Edwardsville.
Edwardsville, whatever.
Important distinction.
Wilkes-Barre is more recognizable than Edwardsville.
Unless you're a big pierogi fan.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So you want to talk about a game and get this show over and done with?
Yeah, I guess we could. Yeah, or we could talk about other things.
Like what? What do you want to talk about?
Well, due to the overwhelming positive feedback given by myself for the Detective Pikachu review, because, you know, we've heard it from nobody actually. I've decided every once in a while I'm going to toss in a video game related movie review. So, guess what, folks? I just found out that they made Dead Trigger into a movie. That's right. The free-to-play first-person shooter zombie game that you can play on iOS, Android, and Facebook. somehow fucking got a movie made out of it with who else? Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, God.
Yes. And so I haven't actually watched the movie. I did watch the trailer to it, but in the near future, there's a zombie outbreak. However, humanity has mostly contained. And so what the world government decides to do is make a cell phone game, and they're going to use it to recruit elite zombie hunters. And there's now a special mission where they have to go to Ground Zero. Not that Ground Zero, that's morbid. This is Ground Zero of wherever the zombie outbreak took place. And they're going to try to extract, like, you know, the original zombie, you know, virus or whatever, and hopefully they could find a cure. Which, by the way, this was also, well, minus the cell phone game part, this was the exact same plot of the sequel to Uwe Boll's House of the Dead, House of the Dead 2, Dead Aim. So
really?
Dead serious. Yeah, no, like, totally serious. That was legit, like, in House of the Dead 2, Dead Aim, they go to a college campus to do the same exact thing.
Oh, God.
Yes. And so this crack team of, you know, elite zombie hunters is led by Dolph Lundgren. And apparently, Madfinger Games, the people who make Dead Trigger and Dead Trigger 2, were so upset with the original shooting of the movie that they disavowed it. And yeah, which is why nobody heard about the movie.
See, part of me thought that we might have gotten a Dead Trigger on Xbox, so I went to check my ready-to-install list, and there is no Dead Trigger. We do have, let's see here, Dead Age, Dead Ahead Warfare, Dead Alliance, Dead by Daylight, Dead Cells, Dead Effect 2, Dead Exit, Dead Island, Dead Island 2, Dead Island Retro Revenge, Dead Island Riptide, Dead or Alive 5, Dead or Alive 6, Dead Rising, Dead Rising 2, Dead Rising 2 off the record, Dead Rising 2, Case West, Dead Rising 3, Dead Rising 4, Dead Space, Dead Space 2, Dead Space 3, Dead Space Ignition, Deadbeat Heroes, Dead Core, Deadfall Adventures, Deadliest Warrior, Deadliest Warrior Legends, Deadlight, Deadliners, and Deadpool, but no Dead Trigger.
Yeah, I'll be honest. Well, first off, they ended Dead Trigger because of the huge amount of piracy, because it, like, that originally cost money, so they moved it to a free-to-play version, which is Dead Trigger 2. And I'll be honest, as, like, an iPhone game / Facebook game, it's surprisingly good. I actually really dig it. Back when I was reviewing that handheld console thing, not console, but the gamepad.
Yeah, the controller.
It's like, yeah, the Game Vice. That thing was beautiful with Dead Trigger 2. But anyway, so in the future, I'm going to be reviewing that movie for this podcast. You're fucking welcome.
Hooray. I am thrilled. And there's a fucking fruit fly flying around my goddamn face. God, I hate fruit flies. Why don't they ever go away?
Maybe you shouldn't keep fruit in your office.
I don't eat fruit. Are you crazy?
I don't know. I figure you might get wild and pick up like an apple every once in a while.
Hell no. There's only one kind of vegetation in my room.
You?
Yeah, that too. Anyway, we should probably get on with the final review of the episode, eh?
All right, fine.
All right, well, final game to talk about is called Pato Box or Pato Box. I still don't know which it is. Developed by Toothink Design Studio and Bromio. Published by Bromio. Released August 21st on Xbox One for $14.99. A surreal boxing quest with a duck. Test your reflexes as you fight your way through an evil corporation and search for retribution. Will you chicken out or will you learn how to duck? Jacob, tell us about it.
Yeah, so this is a pretty weird game. It's kind of like, to describe the look of the game, imagine like a black and white noir version of Punch-Out, that's built on the Wolfenstein 3D engine.
That is so accurate. That's such a good way to put it. Oh my god.
Yeah. And it's actually as bizarre as I just made it out to be. You walk around and you talk to various people, you do little mini quests, to get to the next area, and then you have to fight people. And usually there's also like stealth, but it's not really stealth. It's like, can you avoid the lights? Can you avoid the cameras? Can you avoid not getting shocked by like laser beams and crap? And it's just, you try to get information as to who set you up and who ruined your life. And of course there's femme fatales, there's all the trappings of an average, a regular noir story, with the fact that you're a duck who boxes and who didn't learn to, wait for it, duck. We kill us. Actually, that would be an improvement if we did. But anyway. So, yeah, it's just, it's really bizarre to move around in the game. It's kind of disorienting. And things don't exactly make sense as you first start. But if you're willing to accept the weird world that you're in, and realize that there are some, there's some technical issues with it. I did.
Like, what kind of technical issues did you run into?
It wasn't anything like amazingly terrible. The music is not a technical issue. Really, the only technical issue that I had is that I was finding clipping all over the place.
Mm.
And it wasn't bad. I mean, if anything, it let you see like what was behind the wall and stuff like that later on in the level. It kind of gave you a heads up. But it wasn't anything like really weird. As I said, it's disorienting because it's a very psychedelic's not the right word for it, but it's off-putting, the black and white world. Some of the designs don't mesh, and it messes with your eyes at first. But as you get used to it and you're more used to the world.
The important thing to mention is it's all black and white.
Yes.
So imagine Mad World on the Wii.
That's true. Oh man, I forgot about that game.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Good game.
It was a good game. I wish they had ported that. But anyway, yeah.
But yeah, it's all black and white, so things are, it's going to be a weird adjustment to get used to the visuals, but once you get used to it, I think it's a really cool looking game. I like the style.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was pretty fun. The music I didn't find to be that memorable. But then again, honestly, it really takes a backseat to the visuals and the weird story that unfolds in front of you. I don't know. I mean, there's really not much else to say. I have a feeling that it's a title that is going to be very, you either love this or you either love the ever living shit out of this title, or you're like, man, that was weird. No thanks. yeah, it's just, and I'm firmly in the I loved it group. I think really my only other problem is that some of the solutions to the quest weren't immediately, I'm not looking for immediately obvious, but I remember early on in the game, Joe, you played it too, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, did you make it to the guy with the stomach issues?
Yes.
At the beginning? Okay, yeah. Well, in the quest, he's just like, oh, I must have either left it in the kitchen or in the bathroom. And spoiler alert, so don't listen to us for the next minute. Spoiler alert, the guy's medicine isn't either place. And so you have to wander around and you have to start talking to people and you find out one lady grabbed it. Which, as I said, I mean, it's not obvious, but I don't know. I think
she's the person you had to talk to proceed in the game anyway, so.
True, but at the same time, I figured.
I was still looking for it anyway.
Yeah, I think, and the thing is, I think the game, did it so then you would be forced to talk to her and move forward, but I mean, it's just like the world is so, it was at the time so sparsely populated that you would have done it anyway. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Can we talk about my favorite aspect of the game?
No.
Well, I'm going to say it anyway. I love the fact that everything you interact with, whether it's you're checking on something or you're talking to someone, you punch them.
I also liked how breakable everything was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could break so much shit in this game.
It was ridiculous. It was just like plates would go flying, tables would break up, chairs would flip, you know. Like and early on, there was even a mission. It was just like, oh, man, I'd love to tell my kid that I saw you bust up a whole entire room. And so, well, you go off and do that, you know. Yeah, it's just...
It's fun. It's cool. It's interesting. $15, is it worth it?
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. I mean, if anything, I'd suggest watching like a quick YouTube video of like, you know, like a Let's Play kind of thing. And see if this is like, if you might dig it. Cause I'll be honest, it's not exactly a title for everyone. I could see it being somewhere, I don't know. Like,
Punch-Out fans definitely have to check this one out because of the combat in the game.
Yeah.
Obviously. Well,
that's obviously. But I'm thinking of like, you know, just surreal video games. Not like on the level of Myst or something like that, but surreal like I don't know. I'd say like on the level of like No More Heroes. Maybe even if like you're a fan of watching people play like that Japan only LSD game. Oh, like God. the dream journal thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to put it firmly in that box, but it's along those, you know, I'd say
it's eccentric.
It's very eccentric. And it wears that badge proudly. God bless it. Cause it's just like, we need more unique titles like this. I really dug it. I recommend it.
Awesome. Sounds good. Jacob, always a pleasure having you on here chatting. Thanks again to Purnell and Chris for coming on and doing their things as well. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Yesterday was National Dog Day, and I love my little man. Yes, I do. He's actually here. I'm petting him as I was doing the whole entire podcast.
Aww. Oh,
I know. He's such a cute little boy. Yes, you are.
We'll be right back.